This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or making none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living here and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none do anger or ill will, wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart, should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Very good. Cool. Oh. Indeed.
Difficult.
Okay, so time to chill out and relax. Lovely Tuesday night. Went to Open Brahm last night. If I do this tonight as well, so it's my second teaching in 2 days, so I hope I can provide some more good ideas, especially since many of you came last night, so I can't repeat myself, but maybe I will anyway. Last night we were talking a little bit about various kinds of meditation, from metta to body sweeping and all those sorts of things. And it got me thinking about the topic of structured versus unstructured meditation. I think what a lot of people are very familiar with is the more structured kind, because when you're beginning meditation, you often go to a book or something like Ajahn Brahm's basic method of meditation, or perhaps something like Sharon Salzberg's Loving Kindness. She wrote a whole book on metta meditation, or maybe something like body sweeping in the sort of Goenka tradition, where there's a very, very structured way that you go to a Vipassana retreat, and to be fair, I've never actually been on one. But they have very they have a standard way of meditating. So you do this and then that and then that, and that's all good. Ajahn Brahm talks about going from, you know, the present moment to silent present moment awareness to silent present awareness of the breath, and then onwards and onwards, and that'll give a bit of structure to the meditation. That's all good, but I think on the other hand, someone like me, when I meditate, it's not really like that. So I find it quite hard to teach those styles of meditation. I know a lot of people just like to sit down and do the body sweeping, start with the toes and the feet and the calves and the knees and all that sort of stuff. But I like to just sit down at the beginning of the meditation and just think that, think to myself, what do I really need? What do I really need right now? And usually it's just one thing. So I just want to suggest just maybe just taking the time today when we meditate to develop the comfort in meditation. And I know it's going to work for some people more than others. I decided to sort of delve into the text today and was reading a 5th century book by a guy called Buddhaghosa. So he was writing down ideas about 800 years after the Buddha, and even went into details about the different kinds of temperaments, the greedy, the angry, the deluded, the faithful, the intelligent, the speculative. And this is like 5th century BC. And since then, there's been a whole torrent of psychologists, especially since the 20th century. And the main thing is that everyone's a bit different. And I think that for some people, a more structured approach to meditation helps, and maybe for some, just to just cultivate, just to point the mind in a general direction is actually quite helpful. I know Buddhaghosa went as far as saying what sort of linen you should put on a monk's bed, depending on their temperament. One can sit down and say, may I be happy, may I be well. And that can work quite well, just using a mantra like that, and then going on to sharing the metta with someone you really care about, someone neutral, someone difficult, I think they like to say. And but sometimes you can just sit there and just be comfortable, just to be happy, just to have your bottom on the chair, and really not very much to do. So that's my style of meditation. So I apologize to those who really like structured meditation. That's just the way I am in my own practice. I was also going to talk a little bit about expectations, because I know Bob really wanted me to do some body sweeping meditation today, and I messed up his expectations. So maybe I should just go against my own expectations and maybe do a body sweeping meditation tonight. How does that sound? Do I do that? Yeah. There you go. Don't worry about what I do there. It's one of the more simple techniques, and it's a good practice for beginners, especially. I know a lot of people go on retreats and practice this for non-stop for 9 days and 10 hours. 10 hours a day, is that right? So going for retreats. Some people really get into this, so maybe it is a good thing to learn. All good, we'll give it a go. Right. Do anyone have any questions or any ideas or thoughts or complaints or compliments? Anything? Maybe we can dim the light and just relax. Okay, so please relax. And just take a few moments. You can all hear me. Last night I had no microphone, so I had to speak up a bit, but I can just talk in a normal voice now. That's alright. Okay. So, please bring the mind into the present moment. There's nothing to see, nothing much to taste or smell, quiet room. And now it's the time to give your body some kindness. Allow it to relax. And just be comfortable where you're sitting. Whether you're on the chair, on the couch, or on the floor, just relax. in the toes on your left foot. Let them relax. What sort of sensations are there? Is it warm, is it cold? Is it comfortable? Heaviness there, just letting it rest, and foot. and comfortable. Draw on your chest, feel them pressing. Soles of the feet pressing on the ground, onto the carpet. And just rest them. Feel the heaviness there. Feel the calf. Hold your left leg. And just let the muscles there relax. Nothing to do. Just allowing body to relax and become comfortable bit by bit. kindness. To your right calf. You can use the mantra. May you be comfortable. Relax. At ease. And how does that feel? Move your left thigh, may you be comfortable, may you be relaxed. Been working all day, moving this body around, now you can chill. Some sensations can you feel in the right thigh? Maybe your arms resting upon it, clothing, and just relax and be comfortable. Importance to the sensations in your bottom. Now's the time just to rest. Feeling sensations of the chair or the cushion below you. Pressing up against you as your body presses down. Heavier and heavier. Sensations in the lower back. The aches and pains there. And it'll be eased. Maybe be comfortable. Who's there? Relaxation in the belly now. Feel the sensations there. In tightness. Just relax. Let it all hang out. Well, like a deep Buddha belly. Move your attention from your belly up through the center of your body. To where the breath is. And let it be. With kindness. And breathe comfortably. Feel your hands, the sensitive part of the body. And feel the fingertips. Sensation of relaxation. Spread up the first knuckles, second knuckles, and the palms of your hands. turn your attention to your left forearm. Your wrist, may they be comfortable, may they be at ease, may they rest. Spread from the left forearm to the right. Again, let it be heavy. Drawn down by gravity. And chill. Press down against the legs. Legs and feet. Feet against the floor. And feel the heaviness there, the heaviness of comfort. A breath. And now, with kindness, attend to the left upper arm, from the shoulder, through the bicep, down to your elbow on the left hand side. Let it rest. Feel that relaxation spreading from the left arm through the chest that's already relaxed, over to the right hand side. On the elbow, slowly spreading up to the shoulder, there you feel the warmth, the tingling of your body, and just be comfortable. that he's spread through the back of the neck, through the shoulders, and the upper back. Feel the whole assembly there. Relax. At ease. Pay attention to the neck as it holds your head up comfortably and at ease. And with kindness, stiffness, any soreness in the neck, just vanish away. Relaxation spread up through your jaw. And into the mouth. And especially the corners of the mouth where they rise up and smile. Turn your attention to your cheeks. What sort of sensations are there? May my whole face be relaxed, comfortable, at ease. And let the eyes relax. Your eyes closed. Oh, those little muscles around the brow of your head, maybe relaxed and comfortable. Just watch the sensations rising up from the back of your neck to the back of the head. Just creeping up, comfortable and at ease. Sensations flow right up to the top of your head, creeping up, content and easily satisfied. By now, your whole body should be nice and comfortable and relaxed. And we've come to the end of the meditation, but just wait for the bell. You can wiggle your toes and yeah. We have questions. Oh, that's good. Makes my life easy. Okay. So yes. Always welcome to ask questions. The Buddha was once asked why people are born stupid, and he said because people don't ask questions. Anyway, sorry about me. Okay, so we've got a question. Okay, so yes, when grieving the loss of a loved one, how does someone let go of the person without feeling guilty that they are forgetting about them and that their memory will fade away? Well, I mean, that's actually not a particularly difficult question to answer. What you'll find find is common, especially at Bodhinyana, where there's actually a very large crowd there most days for lunch. There's often people there, and they'll come to the monastery to just remember someone who's passed away. And it happens many, many times. It's actually a Thai tradition to they use a vessel of water, and they pour the water from one part of the vessel into the other half of the vessel, And this is symbolizes their the sharing of merits. So they come to the monastery and they wish to make they either give some food to the monks, the monks cook up a pizza or whatever for lunch, or they might just donate some soap or just things that the temple needs, and that's their way of making good karma for the one who's departed. And I do remember someone had come to celebrate or remember the 20th death anniversary of their perhaps their father, I can't remember, one of their relatives, and Ajahn Brahm said that that was actually pretty significant, that someone was remembered 20 years on, and that someone could make the effort to remember them and come to the temple to in our tradition to make an offering, you know? So I don't think there's any need to deliberately forget someone. And I think most of the people that I've cared about, that I've known, that have passed away over the years, I think as I get older, I'm just in my 40s, but you still remember those people that you knew from long, long ago. And I think that the older you get, the stronger that feeling becomes. So you shouldn't think that you have to forget someone, but at the same time, it's okay to let them go as well, to let go of the grief that you might have. I have to admit, recently my father's been quite unwell, so he's not, as far as I know, ready to pass on quite now, but he's certainly lost a lot of the fitness that he's had over the years. He's only in his mid-70s, I've definitely been taking the time just to sort of contemplate life beyond my father's life. It's okay. It's okay because he's someone that has done so much in the life that he's led so far. He's managed to pack in endless fun and generosity. He'd always take us out for, when I was a kid, my dad was actually, he was a banker, so pretty wealthy. Actually, he left school when he was 16, went out and got a printer's apprenticeship, and then he moved to from Adelaide to Perth after he finished his printer's apprenticeship and never looked back. This is in the days of movable type, so I don't think his skills are particularly useful now, except maybe in a makerspace or something now to bring it back. But he moved on and he moved to Perth, actually in Rolling Stone he had his first house, and he started building saunas for a living. So he did that for a while, and then eventually he met my mum, and they got together and got married, and they were pregnant with mum was pregnant with me when they decided to move to the Big Smoke to Sydney. So I think mum decided for the safety of me and her belly to catch the train instead. So she took the Indian Pacific train from Perth to Sydney. Tells the story. They used to have the potbelly stove on the train at that time, and they put bacon and eggs. That was one of her memories of that journey. And then, my dad ended up getting a job with his best man, my godfather Michael, who was in the financial markets, working with teachers and stuff. My dad got his break there. So when I was growing up, it was actually a very, very wealthy family, really, by most people's standards. So my dad used to take us out on skiing trips to Thredbo, and we got to go to Europe in 1989, and when I was about 11 years old, and spent 6 weeks traveling around. So I always had, Yeah, even though his fitness might not allow him to do those sorts of things now, I still look back on the life that he's led so far, and he's not just gained things in life through wealth and experiences and stuff. He's actually shared a lot with his family. He's a really good dad, now that he's not able to get about as much as he can, it's time for me to sort of spend a bit of time getting coming back, probably go up and see him in a week or two's time and catch the train up on the Armidale line. I have the good fortune now to live in Kelmscott, which is a much easier place to get from and to than Serpentine, where I've lived for so many years. So, just to sit with him and talk about old times and just also our reflections on the world as it is now and the world that eventually he'll have to leave. I can reflect on that with a bit of sadness, and although, as Ajahn Brahm says, these people, you think they don't die, and they go on for another couple of decades. You just don't know. You just don't know. And that's the thing. That is the real contemplation of impermanence, that we're all going to go this way, one way or another, and no one's been given a clock. When we start this life, we don't know exactly when it's going to reach its end. So just to live your life with the recollection, the Buddhist recollection, to days and nights of passing relentlessly. How am I spending my time? So I think that the grief at the end is normal, but I think at the same time, just to reflect on the good qualities, as we often do in the temple, when people come and remember their father after 20 years after he's passed on, that's all good too. So this is the world we've been born into. We have to pass away, and it's okay. You can, I guess, just to sum up, yes, you can let go, and you can also remember. So that's one question. Does anyone have anything else they'd like to ask? You've got to give me an idea now. What should I talk about now?
I was off of the fairies.
You're off of the fairies.
Has anybody else got a question?
No. Go.
What about ego?
Ego?
When you help people do things, but how do we protect ourselves against doing it for the ego as against doing it for the right reason?
I remember the old saying, the old tale. I think it was this is sort of a few decades back, about a woman who was knitting jumpers for the people in Biafra, but she had to stop because she started enjoying herself. That's right, actually. So you talk, ideally, and we're talking ideally here, one would give expecting nothing back in return. So Ajahn Brahm says the same thing, like when you meditate, you meditate to let go of things, to not to get things. But the natural consequence of giving in the right spirit is, at some point, the Buddha said that even to give to an animal, to a dog or something, that would be repaid 100-fold. And he went that whole discourse was sort of goes up in orders of magnitude when you talk about humans and very virtuous people and good monks and the Buddha himself. And he even went on to say that even beyond the Buddha, to give to the Sangha is actually even a bigger thing than that. There are other rewards, and maybe the rewards are for generosity and kindness and giving. The rewards are basically they're there whether you are trying or not. I think it's good just to in life just to keep giving and to enjoy giving as well. The reflection on generosity is like that. You know, oh, this is a good thing. I've done a good act, and I'm allowed to understand that that's the case as well. And if I understand it, then I'll continue to do more good acts. So it's kind of a virtuous cycle there. Yeah. Does that explain it? Something like that. Yeah. Don't worry too much about ego. I mean, you got to look after yourself. You've got to be kind to yourself as much as you're kind to other people as well. Well, they're similar things, aren't they? Yeah.
It's not a bad apple, not a good apple.
Yeah.
And pride is an adjective.
It's
a shiny apple.
Yeah. An adjective. It's a shiny apple. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm JR is like an ego, but JR is a bit of Amatox. That's a pride, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, so that's quite right. So the whole idea of pride, where you put yourself before others, or put yourself above others, I should say, is probably where you need to do a bit of letting go. There's a place in the sutras where the Buddha says, you should never say that you are greater than someone. You should never say that you're less than someone. You should never say that you're equal to someone. And essentially, it's just incomparable to compare one person to another. For me, each life is just like a journey. So we all have our starting point and an end point, and the way we live our life in between. You can't compare them. I was riding the train the other day to go see my dad, and the Armadale line, and even in the middle of the day, you get some interesting characters coming along, and I had a few guys sitting across from me talking about the various prisons they've been through, and I just sort of sat there and looked out the window and just listened to them, and I was just contemplating that, my life could be the same, but for the benefits I've had of a good family and a good neighbourhood, wealthy upbringing. So. But it's not to say that our actions mean nothing either, or that we shouldn't try and do the try and make good karma, and try, because that action, even though it's not necessarily an ego thing, it's not necessarily a pride, does actually have an effect on our minds, our actions, essential. I don't know, what would it? Don't make it too complicated, but
should we try and leave ego behind then or not?
Yeah, I mean, I guess where we are now in Western culture, we're still sort of hanging on to Jung, really, aren't we? Or Freud.
Freud.
There's Freudian ego. There's, I guess, in Buddhism, you have this idea of anatta, which is like, at the end of the day, there isn't really anything solid and unchanging in here. It's all becoming one thing or another. But we've all got our sort of continuum of experience. There's this, whatever this is that we're experiencing now. It's kind of continuous. It's like I'll go back to the monastery tonight, and except for a couple of us, no one else will. We'll have different experiences. So there's some sort of continuity there, definitely. If you want to call that ego, I don't know. And then I have a simple question.
What made you decide to change your life like you had after having such an incredible, all those amazing experiences like skiing and all these things? Mm. It's like you're giving them up now. Mm. So what made you decide that?
Yeah, okay, so...
I hope that's an easy one.
Well, it is actually. It's a good question to ask because everyone, it's one of the questions that comes up quite often when we when I give talks, that sort of thing, which is, yeah, why did I become a monk? Mm-hmm. And essentially, yeah, I mean, for all that I had a very privileged upbringing, living in Greenwich in Sydney, Lower North Shore, very nice neighbourhood, good parents, but I still had a lot of suffering. I guess my teenage years were actually quite troubled, and eventually shortly after high school I was diagnosed with schizophrenia. So actually back then I wasn't schizophrenic, but anyway, I had to deal with chronic mental illness since my early years, but I still managed to go out and ended up moving down to Melbourne. Got a degree in software engineering, so I studied at ECU, and I suppose that was sort of an uptick in my life. So teenage years, not so good, and then had a bit of fun in uni, and then spent 4 years in Melbourne as a programmer. And I kind of did pretty well for myself. By the end of that, the 4 years that I was in Melbourne, I was earning pretty good money, actually. But I was pretty lonely. I ended up deciding that, I managed to get my dream job. I got a contract with a company called Shine Technologies, and it was very interesting technology and good pay and good conditions, and they treated me well, and I sort of found even that was just not very satisfying. My relationship that I've been in sort of petered out, and I started just contemplating maybe just learning how to let go of a bit of stress, I was quite stressed out. I'm sure a lot of people come along to this group here as well, maybe they've even been told by the doctor to come here and learn a bit of meditation, or I know one monk was actually told by his dentist that he should do some meditation because he was grinding his teeth. That was Venerable Mudu. Do you know Venerable Mudu? So he's now moved down to Albany to start a new monastery. He's doing well for himself, and that was just sparked by going to the dentist. But yeah, for me, I was had a lot of time on my hands. I was working reasonably long hours, but I had enough time due to my lack of a social life to do a little bit of reading online about meditation. I'd done a bit of yoga back in university, just to de-stress, and I didn't really enjoy the yoga so much, but at the end where we just lie down, and I suppose there's some endorphins going through the body, and listening to some chanting, and that felt really nice. And one of the companies that I was working for, the company that I worked in before I got my dream job, we did a little bit of you guessed it, body sweeping meditation. every Friday we'd get someone would have to come up with a game for the company. One of these women was into the Goenka tradition, so she'd done a lot of these retreats, and she played this body sweeping tape, and I thought, oh, okay, this is really nice. So at the point that I stood up with my wife, and I had some time on my hands, I just started poking around on the internet, just looking for some information about meditation, and I had a look at a couple of websites and very quickly came across Ajahn Brahm's teaching. And this is back in, I'll get it right, 2004? In about 2004, end of 2004, that time maybe. And even back then you could get Ajahn Brahm talks on the web, even as in MP3 format. And back then even, it was only just shortly after he'd written the basic method of meditation. So I hope we've got a few copies at the back in case anyone hasn't read that yet. It's always there. So I read that and I thought, wow, geez, you know, darn it, that sounds good. So I just run talks about some very, very lofty states of meditation and how to get there. And I was talking a little bit at the beginning about the structure of meditation, the different stages, and Ajahn Brahm really expresses that in a really encouraging way. He makes it very interesting when he talks about the kind of bliss states of meditation. And I know quite a few people even when they just started meditation, sometimes learning how to meditate, they often just fluke something and get a really nice blissful meditation. And that's often a bit of encouragement, but yeah. So in the end, I moved back to Perth. My parents are back in Perth these days, and were back then too. And I went to, what happened though? I guess I started going to Dhammaloka, up in Nolimara now, so the city centre there, and I started hanging out there. I went to my first talk, and I was inspired. I said, yeah, I want to be a monk. So I went up to the guy who's given the talk, Ajahn Chandika, who's in New Zealand now, and he said, oh, maybe you should just try doing a 9-day retreat, you know? And meanwhile, I spent a bit of time just enjoying the company that I found at Dhammaloka, and having, you know, suffered a lot from, especially from loneliness in my life, you know, just to have some friends and a place you can go and hang out, and not, you don't need to have, you know, don't need to drink booze or anything on a Friday night. And started going to the Saturday beginners meditation classes there. They still do them with first Bianca and then Dennis Shepherd, and Dennis I just saw this morning. Yeah. And then I did a 9-day retreat. I did a 9-day retreat in November 2005, and that was with Ajahn Chitamalu, who's now in Germany, and yeah, that was it. I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. And
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I had to ask, did it help with your schizophrenia?
That's a good question, actually. I've always found that sort of mental health and meditation, they're not separate things, but one can influence the other. But I find that meditation is one thing, and at the same time, I still need to take medication, and but that's okay. Yeah, and I find that over time you become more confident. Anxiety is like an issue in life, and you're just generally a happier person. And I don't know that. Just being healthy mentally and enjoying life are two sort of separate but complementary things. Life is good. Life is good. I've hit. I'll be 42 this year, and things are great. Having a lot of fun. I've me and Santini, we're up on the hill now. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Mostly you're all working
stuff. Yeah. So finally, we've Ajahn Brahm gave us all the talk a while back, and he said, okay, you know, so there's the junior monks, they're like the apprentices. We've got the middle monks, you know, 5 to 10 years, they're the journeymen, as they say. And, you know, you guys have got 10 reins, so you've been doing this for 10 years. It's time you went off and started your own places. So, So a few of us have all sort of hopped around. Myself and Ajahn Santuti. Ajahn Santuti is coming up for his 15th reign this year, so we're probably the most senior of the people that have left Bodhinyana. We sort of jumped in, and I've been there for almost 6 months now, and it started out, it was actually pretty hard, I have to admit. But over time you have you guys got a lot of freedom and away from the nest, a lot of responsibility as well. Got to be good monks, so but we're getting heaps of support. I know a number of you come to feed us or come for the Monday meditation group and seniors group as well. So, a lot of it sort of seems to be going remarkably well. We're trying to develop a little house across the road on the Stopper Road property, and that's going well too. We should have room for about 5 monks there, or at least 5 residents. And it's nice to have the opportunity to go out and build something yourself. Yeah. And in the meantime, we've got to wait for the workings of the council and various people like the water board, and I think I've got a friend in every government department now, which is going well. So at the same time, we've got that support at the temple, the Cambodian temple, which is already established. We get food every day, and I just said he has a little project for us every day, pretty much. So it's a good life. Good life. A fortunate life.
So what is the happening with the Rolly here? So we've got the Rolly stone.
Yeah, okay. Alright, so we've got the Wat Damayanarang, which is on the boundary of Kelmscott and Rollystone, and that's maybe 6 hectares, I think, 1.6 hectares, and then we've got 10 hectares of forest next door in Rollystone. So one's owned by the Cambodian Buddhist Society, one's owned by the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. It's zoned rural living, so it's not going to be a big monastery or anything. It's not really going to be a monastery at all. It's going to be a house.
It's a house.
And if we want to do any ceremonies or anything, we can come up to the Damayanarang. We can do all the that sort of thing there. But most of the place for monks to hang out. We've already got Nanagarika, a trainee, Rob, so he's been with us for a while now. He ordained as Nanagarika on New Year's Eve, so coming to the end of this year, we'll have another novice, hopefully, if he wants to go through with it. We'll have him along, and then we've got 10 hectares of forest. We're not really going to do too much with it. On the far boundary from the temple, on the eastern boundary, is a block of stables. The only real building on the land, and we're going to renovate it between the stables. These old stables, they were built, I think, 1982, according to the, well, got the building license in 1982, so they've been sitting there almost 10 years, and they'll be room there for 5 months. There'll be a place for sort of breakfast and tea, showers, laundry, got a little office there, turn the tack room into an office. Yeah, we'll have a little place, just our own little place, and that sort of thing really helps Ajahn Brahm, because it means he can move a few more monks out of Bodhinyana. It's a good thing. We can get more, for all the people that leave Bodhinyana, we can bring in another new trainee to become a new monk. And since Ajahn Brahm is the probably the best person to be doing that, although we've got our own Anagarika, but in general Ajahn Brahm's a great teacher, so every monk that grows up and leaves the nest, That's another spot for someone who wants to come spend time with Ajahn Brahman, who's a really good teacher. So we've got our little place. And Mudu will be down in Albany. He's got his project. We're not even certain about what property it's going to be yet, but it's always getting through the council at this time. A lot of the troubles we have these days are due to legislation that's come in recently, maybe 2015. It's much, much harder to build in the forest now due to fire regulations. Especially after Yarlouk. So everything gets tightened, and there's more paperwork and rules and stuff. But
you keep telling me you live in a cave.
Hmm?
You keep telling me you live in a cave.
No, that's
Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn Brahm's got a cave,
yeah.
Ajahn Brahm's got a cave. If you go to places like Sri Lanka, they've got the great old cave that have been there for thousands of years, you know. You can see the old drip line that they've carved across, and the monsoonal rain will drip down the front, and then at some point someone's come and put a little wall in front of it, make it a little bit more cozy. But mostly at Bodhinyana it's just small huts, just a single room dwelling with a walking path outside, solar panel on the roof, a little 12 volt battery to run your lamp, a little heater, and that's about it. It's got a bed, it's got a shelf, and they're great. It's it's great that it's all been done before 2015, but now we have to struggle a bit to build new stuff. But who knows, the regulations will change again because, it's not just us, there's all these people with like eco lodges in Margaret River who want to build in the forest.
How do you go from having anything and everything to four walls, a bed, a shelf, and a walking path?
I see. You're asking me to remember what was going through my mind back in 2006. how was it really? It's all filtered through the experience. I think generally it gets easier. It gets easier over time. When you first get there, you just had to fit into the monastic way of doing things, and you'd be pretty busy actually when you first get to Bodhinyana. I had almost no interest in driving as a layperson, although I did get my P's. I'd hardly driven at all. I got to the monastery and then Ajahn Brahm said, maybe you should get your license. And alright, and they said, you said you had P's for 3 years, you can have a license. So then I'm going from doing almost no driving to spending all day driving as an anagarika, take the monk here, take them there, going to dance, going to funerals, going everywhere really. Going to Curtin University, where Ajahn Brahm received his Curtin medal. But he used to go there goes every year to see the new people who have won the award. So I drove him to that. All sorts of meetings. What do you get it for? It's just being really good, I think.
Yeah. Just
like
being very good Buddhist.
I know. That's right. The one that I saw. Mm-hmm. Oh, was that kick? About to get kicked out? 3 minutes. I'll finish the story in 3 minutes. But it's actually lovely. When I went there, there was two of them. One of them was an Aboriginal fellow. There was another one who had done the Pennies for Polio campaign.
Yeah.
And he told the story, I'll never forget it. He went to this, I can't remember where it was, and there's a little girl that said, I was hoping to buy you an ice cream. And she said, but I can't. He said, why? It's not Christmas. I'm like, this girl's just living in poverty, only gets an ice cream once a year. So it's those sort of people who get the Curtin medal, I think. I can't remember exactly what it's for. Seriously.
Yeah, because he goes to the cancer place and he goes to palliative care.
Yeah.
He goes helping everybody.
Yeah. Even goes to, I think, again with Curtin, to like a a group of lawyers, I think, or the class of lawyers that's about to graduate. So all sorts of things.
Yeah, what you want.
That's right, ethics, that's right. Oh, okay.
Wasting his time.
Yeah, no, well, anyway. But, yeah. Anyway, so that's what it's like. You leave late life and then you've got a year as a man of character, which is very different to being a novice. And novice is a little bit different. Once you're a novice, you're sort of wearing the rugs. It's pretty, you're pretty much a monk then. And then, some things were easier to give up than others. I find music was difficult for me.
Yeah.
I like music, but nowadays I prefer meditation without a song in my head. Yeah, because if you're a monk and you've got a lot of time to yourself, you can always remember some of the old favourites or whatever.
Doesn't that distract you? Once you start to meditate, if you start having the song running around in your head, you're not meditating.
Mm. Well, you are, because even with all the distractions that the mind throws up, that's still meditation. It still counts, but it does take a bit of training to let go of. Yeah, it's maybe music for someone else. It might be food or someone else. Yeah, and a lot of it comes down to just
practice.
Simplicity. Yeah, just realizing that, letting go of these things, lets you have a sort of a bit of meditation practice, and it's worth it.
Yeah. A bit, in a way, you were surprised when you let go how easy some stuff was.
Yeah, I guess. Some things you can do without. It's all that monk, you know. This nun once said to me, and she said, thank you for me, I'm a girl. How do you do it? Are you business? But yeah, pretty easy to let go of relationships and all that sort of stuff. The idea of, just letting go of the whole idea of having a career and trying to pay the mortgage and all that sort of stuff. That's something that I'm quite happy I missed out on because it's tough. I was married in a relationship and married for 4 years, and I just thought there was never enough money. I lived in a house in Footscray for 2 years, and I thought, well, this is a nice house, maybe we'll buy it one day. It doubled in value in the time we were living there. I think, wow, that's just a whole lot of stuff I'm happy to let go of. But anyway.
Thank you.